Hello there, my name is Terry and welcome to the Animation Industry Podcast. This episode is all about pitching, the steps to put together a killer pitch bible, how to connect with studios to give your pitch to, how to follow up with them effectively, and even which animation conferences are great to pitch at. And on top of all this, something really special I'm excited to share with you is that today's guest, who is seasoned in pitching, even made her pitch Bible template available to you for free. It's packed with excellent tips and tricks, and all you have to do is fill it out with your show specifics and your pitch Bible is complete. And this is especially great if you're putting together your first pitch. So to get your copy, just check the links in the description of this episode. It's called Pitch Bible Basics. Now, the person who I'm talking to today, like I said, is seasoned when it comes to pitching TV shows, so much so that she's created a studio whose number one focus is to pitch original concepts. And her name is Katia Griffles, and she is the owner of Glow in the Dark Concept Studios, which operates out of Burbank, California. So she is going to bestow all her pitching wisdom on you and also share the really interesting story of how she got into animation in the first place. But something else really interesting is how we actually met. Last November at the Toronto Animated Arts Festival International Conference, we both ended up becoming finalists in the pitching round in front of the whole conference, which was an amazing experience. So I was able to pitch my preschool show called The Silly Duck Wizard, which is about a wizard who only knows dumb spells about ducks. And Katia and her partner Maureen pitched We're Woofs, which is about a pack of misfit kids who discover they can turn into dogs after they're exposed to a leak from a mysterious facility. Now, before we dive in, this episode is sponsored by the awesome team at startastudio.com. Start a Studio is a new online school focused on the business side of animation. They have both free and paid courses, an online community, and downloads to help you succeed in your animation career and build your own cool, creative, and viable animation studio. All the content is written and presented by experienced animator and studio founder John Draper, and you can use the unique discount code AIP as an Animation Industry Podcast in the checkout to save 20% on their popular Pro Studio Startup course. So whether you're looking to up your freelance game or plan and launch your own animation company, check out startastudio.com. Now let's jump into the chat. So hi, Katia. How are you doing today? Really great to have you on the chat. So excited.
Hello. How are you?
I don't always meet. I'm good, thanks. I don't always meet who's coming on the podcast chat in real life, but I'm glad we talked in real life last fall before we ever did the podcast, because it's cool to meet people too. So today I want to talk about kind of your journey into creating like the really unique studio setup that you have, because most studios that I've talked to, their primary focus is on commercial work, and then their secondary focus is on creating their own IPs and like pitching those things. But you, with Glow in the Dark Studio, your primary focus seems to be on creating original IPs, and then your secondary focus is the commercial work, which is like the opposite of everybody else, and I haven't really come across a studio like that before. So I want to talk all about that and pitching and everything, because you're like a master at this. But first, I love to know why you chose this industry, because from my experience, nobody gets into animation because they're like, oh, it's a super lucrative and easy career. They get into it for the love of it, and something drives them to do it. So what is that for you?
So for me, it's been like a whole like weird, wonky journey. I always liked storytelling. I wanted to be kind of like a writer or an artist as I was a kid. I have dyslexia, so I cannot really write really well. And I figured out, like, if I was drawing, that would be, like, a better thing. And it's like, that's something I can get better, and I'm not going to be judged, right? So I'm from Spain. There is obviously, clearly, not animation in Spain. I mean, now it's starting, but when I started, it was, like, not really. So I went to the comics. So that's how I started. I love storytelling, and then comics have, like, the perfect little amount of words for me to handle and, like, great, like, visuals. I love that they could create stories the beginning to the end, and that was really, really fun, except it doesn't really pay very well, and it gets really lonely, like super lonely. So since I was really determined to make storytelling as a career, I decided to come to the States, and then I thought, like, you know what? Animation seems like a really fun group activity that I can be part of it, that involves a lot of people, but it's still very creative. It's still, like, does art and stuff, and and you see it like on TV or in a film. And I didn't know anything about animation when I started my BFA, like really like nothing. I learned all of it in, but I just learned to really love it. And then that, like, it bounced in a couple of places, and then it ended at Glow in the Dark, which is kind of brings together everything I really love, like storytelling, but also the different medias, which I kind of really like too.
Okay. So you originally just wanted to tell stories and decided that writing wasn't your thing, so you're going to draw.
Yeah.
Did you try to push a career as a comic book artist first before you decided animation?
Yeah, no, definitely. I was a former comic book artist in Spain for like a couple of years, and I published like a couple of books when I was very young. I did at some point, it was not really like sustainable because I couldn't really pay my bills. It was like so many hours, and I had to have like every other job like aside for it. So I decided to like stop for a second, like save up, and then try to go like a college degree because I thought that was important to work in animation.
Ah, so you really didn't find comics to be your thing, I guess, but how did you, so you said you stopped and saved up and then you came to the States at some point. How did you take that big risk, like all at once?
Well, I didn't have anything. So it was not really a risk for me. It was like perhaps for better, you know?
Okay.
When I came to the States, I was fairly young. I think I was like 23 or 24, maybe 24. So I was not really losing anything for applying to a school and trying to see if I was getting scholarship. Like I didn't had any, and moving was a big gap, but I was not really happy with where I was. So I felt like any place better than this. Clearly, like I love comics, but I don't want to do it professionally because there are certain stuff I didn't really quite agree with it. So yeah, it was not like a risk. It was like an opportunity, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. So how did you, I feel like you jumped ahead to Glow in the Dark, but how did you go from college to having your own studio? Like,
right.
What is in between that?
Like, how, why? Yeah. So I came very convinced, to the States that I wanted to do an internship in a big company. I wanted to learn. And I did wanted to work in a big studio. I that was my dream. This is where I came. And I was
so
very
like Pixar or Nickelodeon or something like that.
Yeah, I wanted to work at Disney or Kermit, okay. Either or. Yeah, those were my top goals. And when I was in school, I did like a really cool mentorship with Lorelai Bobbitt that she was working at Disney. So I got the opportunity to kind of like see how it was the studio inside. And I learned a lot from her, like the passion that she had for movies. Like it was very contagious, really. I just wanted to like exactly be like her. And like I was amazed, right? But then when it was my turn to do things, after graduation, I was like hired at Disney Consumer Products, and I also did like an internship at DreamWorks Consumer Products. And in both parts, it was Consumer Products, but weird enough, I landed in positions where pitching was very important. When I was at DreamWorks, that they stayed quite a long time, sure, I was part of the Consumer Product, but somehow we hear pitches for movies. And I just grow like I don't know, I was like, what, you can do this? Why am I sitting here drawing like dolls and dresses? Like I want to be talking about stories. And like my whole like storytelling passion kind of like came back, and then all of a sudden I realized it's not that I wanted to work in a big studio because that was meaningful to me. I just wanted to work in stories that were meaningful to me. And perhaps if I stayed in a big studio, that will have take a long time, and I'm very patient. So I kind of like realized I had like enough freelance that I could start a little venture without really losing anything, because I didn't really have like a steady family or like nobody to support. It was just myself.
Right.
And it was like, I don't know, there's people that have dreams like buying a house or having a dog or things like that. I'm like, my dream is to tell stories. And if that means I'm going to put all my savings into a crazy venture, but that's a story, right?
Yeah. Hey, what? That's what I'm doing right now.
Right.
Also, fun fact, I had an interview with Disney Consumer Products in Canada, in Toronto, but it wasn't on the drawing side. It was more like being like a project manager to like sell products, and agencies would create the artwork, I guess.
Yeah.
So were you were working at Disney Consumer Products drawing like Disney princesses for like furniture and stuff?
I was a little bit of a, so I was in a project that's the original thing that they hired me that they cannot talk about, but it involves storytelling. And then after that project, I was moved into the princess department. So yes, I was designing dresses for the princess dolls. Oh, I'm not that much of a princess myself. I'm more like a pirate. But it was really cool because there's the princess department and then the Star Wars department and the Marvel department, and everybody's like really into wherever their department is, right? And we all share a floor. It was a really good time. I learned a lot, and I love toys. So there was like no wrong or like stepping there for a little bit. So yeah.
So for me, I also like something that you said about, you know, not realizing pitching was a thing, because for me, I was working my day job in my SEO career, and I randomly connected with somebody on LinkedIn who invited me to come for a tour at Toonbox Entertainment, which is a feature film studio here. And like I went, and there was like 150 people working on a feature film, and I was like, there's an animation industry thriving and people make money here. Like, I didn't realize this was a thing at all.
Right? So
that like opened my eyes completely, and now I've like turned my life around. But for you, it was like like hearing that people can pitch to studios.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was also like it was impressive, because when I was at DreamWorks, it was starting consumer products, it was like barely the bare bones. And as an intern, you just go and take notes on wherever it's happening, right? Like it's not, you're kind of invisible. But that was a great opportunity for me to see all these people that like had these stories that they wanted them to become movies. I'm like, oh, they're normal people? Like, what?
Right? It feels like all of, like when you watch a movie or a TV show or something, you're like Hollywood somewhere, I guess. Like people that are nameless, faceless magicians make this stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. And I try to tell that to more people, because of my pitching experience, a lot of people will be like, oh my gosh, I have an idea. What do I do? And I'll be like, just go to a studio. And a lot of studios have a development team, and just like, email them your pitch, not email them your pitch, but say, I have a pitch.
It like, even like for me, I know that sounds weird, but like when I learned it, that development was a thing, it was like out of our center already. It's been like 4 years of my degree. I'm out. I've been working for a year, and now I'm learning that there is a freaking development team. I'm like, why nobody told me before? I could choose that route. But
so how did you go from your eyes being open to now running a studio where you focus on pitching?
Oh, wow. It was actually, it was like a really hard story. Because before I was brave enough to decide that was my path, I had like a really big clash of dreams. Because I realized the dream I thought I had, what I wanted to be, is not who I wanted to be. Therefore, I had no dream anymore, you know? Like, it didn't really happen, like, magically. Like, oh, I'm not into that, but I'm into this. So I went into not a big depression, but like a really big creative block, because I was like, oh, I came to a different country to do this thing I thought I loved, and I did it, and I don't like it, and I don't know why I don't like it, and I'm very unhappy. But there's nothing wrong with the companies I'm working, because they are fantastic. It's me. I'm the problem. Like, what the hell? And just realizing one day that you're, the life that you thought you wanted, it doesn't make sense anymore. So I couldn't do anything. I had like a big old creative block. And the way I overcome it, it was doing comics. I was like, well, I cannot really find a job on that state. I'm just going to handle like whatever freelance I have. I didn't even wanted to do that, but I'm like, I must find something to do. And then I started to do comics, a little bit about like myself and how I was feeling. And then little by little, I started realizing like, it's not that I hate comics, it's just I hate being alone. Like, I do like stories, and I do like telling things, and comics is very similar to pitching, and I do love that. And just by writing about myself and, like, getting over my drama, I definitely decided, like, hey, well, I like pitching, and then I look online, and I'm like, well, there's nothing about it, and there's no studios that just do that. And I'm like, well, if the job I want doesn't exist, I'm just going to make it.
Well, I like that. So how do you feel now that you do this full time?
I'm really excited. Like, I think it's been like such a change of like my not only my personality, but like how I take things is like, I feel like I'm a privileged person to be able to wake up every morning and go to work on something I really like, besides the struggles, because there are many. So it's not like a rainbow path at all. It's like, it's really like, we like this, like cricket. But I feel really lucky, and I enjoy it, and I love telling stories, and I'm just, I decided that that was a risk I wanted to take. I gave myself like, I don't know, 5 years. If in 5 years this doesn't really move forward, because starting a business is really hard, they'll decide what's my next dream. But for now, I'm still on my 5 years.
Fine. So what year are you in?
I'm on year, it's going to be year four.
Oh, wow. So you're next coming year, up on the end of five.
Yeah, it's
so,
coming up.
Do you feel that you are like, so you started your dream wanting to tell stories, and you did that through comics and realized that that was too lonely. So you went to animation, but then you realized that that wasn't exactly for you. So you've gone back now to telling stories, I guess, with other people, the stories you want to tell, and that is expressed through pitching. Do you feel completely fulfilling yourself and your dream of what you want to be doing here? Or do you think there's still a next step that you haven't yet reached?
Well, I think the beauty of the pitches and the beauty of like telling stories, like once you can tell a story, you can put it anywhere. And there's like all of a sudden I discovered that perhaps I was being really stubborn on like, oh, I just want to make pitches for movies perhaps, right? But no, I can make books, I can make comics again, I can make video games if I want, and I can learn that. And there's so much I can learn and so much I can do on my own. And if I wrangle people around like I'm doing, so we're doing so much together, and it's just great. And I think that's like kind of like just like let me loose in a playroom full of stuff, and I just want to play with everything.
Yeah. Do you? I guess my first thought on that is like master of none. Even though you are like having fun and everything, like if you're pitching video games and movies and TV shows, like do you think that's spreading yourself too thin, or it's like you're focusing on really great pitches and it doesn't matter what you're pitching?
My main focus is like great pitches, and now I'm like only focusing on serialized content. It doesn't matter what it is for, because I like to adapting things to different stuff. And I agree with you, like trying to pitch to every other thing is like trying to do so many things. So what we've been focusing is that serialized content, and if it fits on a TV show, then it's great. And if the TV show needs to be a trilogy, it's still a serialized content. If it needs to be like a comic book collection, it's still a serialized content. If it's going to be like a one movie of something, that's not it.
Okay.
So in a video game, I haven't done it. That's one of the things I will be excited. I would love to learn. I hope it comes someday, but yeah. Little steps.
So can you give like an overview of what Glow in the Dark Studio, what you do today? Like how big you are, like what you produce, what your thing is, like all that stuff.
So we're very little. We're basically like a 4-people studio. One of them usually is an intern. We have in staff 2 writers, which are wonderful, and they help me like a lot with kind of their ideas and their passion. Then we have a secondary artist, because sometimes I feel there's people that draw better than I, or like they have better styles, and I think it's wonderful that I can count with their help, because I don't mean to draw everything on my own. I mean, that's crazy. And then we all kind of look over like the business part of it, because it's very difficult for me to do. And a day at the studio, it's usually really chaotic. Like there's usually like random mails that we have to prioritize, but we also have our stories that we touch base weekly. There are different stage of development. So it's really fun for me to jump one story to another in different stages. For instance, we're finishing a Bible for a preschool story. At the same time, we're just starting with an original pitch with somebody, like a new collaborator we're just signing in. And at the same time, we just submitted last week 2-hour stories to a competition in Czechia, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a lot of prepping for that. We also started like a Patreon, and then we're looking into self-publishing books this year, because we have so many stories made as well to do books, because we can do it, and why not?
Nice.
So yeah, it's like a lot of things. It'll be like, whoa. Like, but everything happens.
Like print books?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned that you were going to a competition. That's one thing I want to touch on too, because I know you've been to like literally every animation conference ever. So you're 4 years in. How does it, you know, you said it's amazing to wake up and like do this every day. What is the most difficult part of this whole process, or having a studio or starting it? Or like, one thing that I think of is like, I'd just be very scared about the future.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's something that's scary. And like waking up with the energy to believe in yourself, that's also really draining. Because I mean, I pull that machine because I have this dream, but not everybody have this dream, you know? So just to, when we have like a bump, though we do have big bumps, and sometimes it's really scary, just have to be that person that's like, it's okay, we'll get out of this. I think those are the hardest parts. Getting everybody on track, or like even myself. Sometimes I wake up and I have bad days, and I also don't believe in it. Then my husband makes me believe in it, and I'm like, I'm back on this. Okay. So yeah, it's hard sometimes.
I was gonna ask you, what do you do to get back on track? But I guess your husband is that person that gets you back on track.
He's a great person that like sees me like, no, little steps, and I'm like, little steps.
Yeah. Nice. So okay, so kind of one of the main things that you do is pitching. But from what I know about pitching is, from the moment you pitch, it can take years to even get optioned, and then once something is like optioned, it can take like years to get developed. So how are you managing that as part of your business model if you can't, I guess, really control how many pitches you sell or the time period that they get made in?
Exactly. I cannot control what they sell. And I always think, as having as a goal of the company, like, we're going to sell a pitch a year, that's really irrealistic, because I mean, that's not up to me, and it's up to luck most of the time. However, I can control how many stories I can make in a year. Mm. And I know, as long as I keep making enough stories to have something new, people will remember me. And what we try to have is, at least, last year was crazy. Last year we did like more stories than ever. We did like 9.
Wow.
Yeah, this year we're going to keep it a little bit shorter. We're going to like do 4, I think. But yeah, I will say every 3 months we have like a new story. Sometimes there are months that we have like more than one going on. And we just like test it and see if people is interesting, we go pitch and then we move it forward. And if not, we'll just like shelve it or like put in a different route for like now books, right? For example.
Gotcha.
But the idea is to make a lot of stories, to be super creative and to make sure every story is different.
So you have a library of maybe like, I don't know, two dozen or something stories.
Yeah.
How do those pay off for you if you can't control whether they sell or not, I guess?
Well, I mean, I use my first, we do a lot of freelance. So I got lucky to do like a lot of the stories that we did the first year, to establish like contacts, like create like a relationship with, like people I would like be able to pitch, to get to learn them. And I use those stories as of course I want them to be made, but it was also like my goal on it. It was like try to get to know these people, to get to know the studios where I wanted to be, right? And the goal is not always, in general, like to sell the story that we're pitching, but to open the door for the next one. And then for them to remember that story that we did, so that when the time is right, they'll pick it.
That's like a really smart way to network with people that you may not be able to get in touch with otherwise. You're like, mm-hmm. Hey, we have a pitch. Also, the artwork is beautiful. We have full story development. We have a writer on our team. And if you ever have any other projects, you can get in touch with us, right?
Exactly.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So it'll be interesting to see where, because if you just keep developing pitches, eventually you'll just have this massive amount of IP, and then hopefully they all get made at some point. But also, does that give you an opportunity to like change your style drastically and showcase new talents and stuff from your team as well?
Yeah, no. That's one of the things too. Like, I get bored of myself doing the same thing, and that includes drawing the same way. Like, I love when people say I have a style, and I like, I wish I had a style too, but like, not really, because I love to create new styles. Like in every story that we have, it's like, how is this going to look? And that's like my favorite part, doing all the research for that. And I don't want people to know I draw it. I just want to like make it look really cool, and it doesn't matter who draw it. Like, that's not, whatever. Like, I did it because I had to, but if I can put somebody that does it better here, do you do it?
Nice. So I'm wondering if we can go through the process of developing a pitch a little bit more, just because you've done a lot and you've pitched to at many competitions and companies and stuff, so you've got it like nailed down. Also, I think this is like a good time to plug the PitchBook Basics PDF that you created for this podcast. So if you're listening and you're interested in pitching, Katya and her studio has put together a PDF called PitchBooks Basics, which you can download in the description of this video. And it's basically a format on how to put together a pitch Bible with all of their tips included. And it's also very beautifully done. So you can get that by downloading at the link in the description. And maybe we should talk about that. So can you take me through the stages of, you know, nothing exists to you're in a meeting with a full pitch Bible, like connecting with producers?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we also had to learn on the way. So we, as long as like the years passed, it's stuff that like we adapted. But like at the moment, like the way we do it is like either we find like a really interesting person or we find like a really cool topic that we like, and we start like throwing balls to each other, like here at the studio, like what about this? What about that? What do you think about this? And then we just come up with like a concept, and then if we're all like engaged enough, it's like, okay, well, who are the characters, this and that? And then you start developing. And when it sounds like a something that we're all on board, of course, like at this point, the way I create stories is not only writing. I need to draw so I know the characters better. So it will be some art already. And then we just start putting on some similar kind of format of like the little PDF that we created. Because that's useful. Like if you can explain your story in a really basic way, then people will listen. You won't take a lot of time for anybody because you don't want to be boring the room, right? And then when we have something that like, well, I mean, visuals are really important, so we spend a lot of time on like the graphic design aspect of it. But when it looks good, we just compress it. We make like a little page that's like basically like a logo, the log line, and that's it. And that we send to our contacts. It's like, we have this. This is new. Are you interested? And we cross fingers. Because if they say yes, we have 2 weeks to mount a pitch booklet.
Oh, so you don't actually go into the full development of what it is unless you get a yes.
Yes.
Interesting.
I don't have like we have like a lot of writing material before, because of course you want to know as much as you can. But if there's no interest, why am I going to spend time making a Bible, you know? Like I'll do it if somebody gives me like a meeting time, and it's usually within 2 weeks. So there are 2 weeks of hell.
Interesting. That's a really smart way of doing it. 2 weeks of hell also, I guess.
It is.
Do you feel like there have been ideas that you've really wanted to flesh out as a pitch Bible because you really believe in them versus, I guess, this other format that you've been executing?
Yes. And that's, it really helped me to do those in the beginning, because I felt if I haven't spent time developing the things I believe in, like Bibles, like I wouldn't have learned how to make a Bible. And I think, if now that I learn how to make a Bible, I can put a Bible really fast. But if I never have done it, then I will put my foot in my mouth.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you do in those 2 weeks to put together the Bible?
It's hell. We divide like between like, so at the office where like Marina and Lydia, which they're wonderful. And they take most care of like the text. We make sure that like the whole thing fits in 6 pages, no more. We're really strict about it. But all the information that we give in the PDF must be on those 6 pages. If shorter, better. And I take care of all the graphic design aspect. I mount like the pages. And then we have so 2 weeks of hell, right? So it needs to be done in a week and a half, because we gotta send it to the printer because we wanna have a leave behind. So it is a little bit of like overnight, and like editing 6 pages is very difficult. But sometimes we bring like only 1 page, which is a bit more difficult than editing 6 pages. Because we really hammer on the text, making sure that it's as creative as possible, but it conveys the spirit of the property, but it also says what they have to say, but it also hits the thing that it needs to have a Bible, and we don't go on the branches, you know, and like, goodbye, what was that about now? And then we do some kind of presentation board that we also print. So it is a little bit intense, and we have to practice the pitch. So
oh my gosh,
all that happens.
That's the most intimidating part, I'm sure. So What do you include in the what's like the secret, if you can share your secret sauce? What's the secret sauce where you're like, I can't wait for the production team to see this part of the pitch? Like, what do you like, what is that thing that you know is gonna like hit the nail on the head, get people excited about?
I think most of the time is our characters. Like, I think our characters have a lot of personality, and I'm always really excited to let people know who they are and what they do and all their shenanigans. And I get overexcited about like I don't know, what is it that they're doing, whatever, what is it that they're pitching? And when people start like believing on them as I believe, then that's really cool. Even if they don't buy it, like, shit, like the fact that like you can explain your own story to people and get make them excited, that's just awesome.
And that's really hard to do. Can you give me an example of like personality of a character? Like, what would make a good personality?
For us, we always try to have characters that have big flaws. Characters that like are not perfect, that they will need to learn something, and the learning path is going to be a little bit painful, but also funny, and makes it relatable. I love especially like stories like when kids are like 7, 8, 9, because that's when you're like the most innocent of all. And I love creating those characters that have big dreams, that they don't know about the world, but they're also like little monsters, because kids are little monsters.
So like, what's an example of a flaw that you'd give a character?
We have, for instance, in the werewolves, right? That's the one that we went to pitch. Then we have the main character, Hubert. His biggest flaws, and then he's unable to understand why he needs friends. Because he has such a fun time on his own with his own little world that he created, that he doesn't see the value in it. So therefore, every time we have to struggle with the 1,000 characters that we have in that thing, it's painful for him, but also like he's not allowing himself to have fun, but he's learning to have fun. And that's really charming, I think. So yeah, things like that, I don't know. I think
I like that, because like, I think a obvious character flaw would be like, character A doesn't like spiders or something. Like, it's too obvious and straightforward, versus like, that's something very tied to the personality that can be drawn out in many situations. Like, I'm already thinking like, okay, if he makes worlds for himself and doesn't like friends, but then ends up in situations where he needs a team to help him,
right,
then that's like a struggle for him to get over, and like can have a really nice message at the end and can be repeated too. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. You can put that. Also, like, I love the part where we have to put those little pieces on the episodes. When we start thinking about episodes, and then you have to like showcase how those flaws are going to make him stronger, but like, how is he going to struggle on that? Because I mean, in the case of Hubert, for example, he's going to become the leader of the pack. He has zero interest in being the leader of anybody. And then that's something like really charming, like people waiting for him to decide, but he's really indecisive, and just having to take on that role and see him learning. I think it's really fun to see that through the episodes. Yeah.
Neat. So you've got this pitch package together that you've scrambled to do in a week and a half and get to the printers. It's got a couple episodes. It's got the characters drawn out. You've got artwork. You show up at the studio. What happens then?
Then you show up at the studio, and actually, that's one of my favorite parts, because I look forward to see the people that we're going to see. Like, I feel like we develop a relationship, like, other than also pitching, because I see them either quite often or, like, I see them in competitions. So I get to know how they are doing and all of that. And then we get into the meat of the thing. And it's basically trying to explain in the simplest way possible, but without losing the spark, what it is about. And they always want to know why it's important for you. So you got to be prepared for that question. Like, why are you telling this story to me? And why is it you that you need to tell this story? So if you're telling a story because unicorns are trendy, that's going to come across. But if it just happened that when you were a kid, you were in the hospital and this unicorn toy was what saved you, and now, you know, unicorns are really important to you and you want to tell a unicorn story because that saved your childhood, that's a good story.
Okay. Do you make those stories up as well?
Actually,
because you have dozens of pitches at this point in your library. Are they all super connected to somebody personally in the?
Yes, actually, yes. Like, I always try to grab, I mean, parts of my life that's been really interesting or really bizarre, and try to put either, if it's not myself personally, but like things from my childhood. Like, for instance, for again, the werewolves one example, right? It's about dogs. Do I love dogs particularly? No, but my best friend.
You don't love dogs?
I mean, I have a dog. I love
you. You have a dog and don't love dogs?
Okay, what I are love you saying? Dogs is a big thing. It's like, I love fishes. I have a fish. I love the fish. Fishes in general, they're fine. But I like dogs and I know so much about dogs because my best friend loves dogs. And she studied a degree on like dog training when I was going to the comic school. And that was her passion. And I just got driven into it. And I just wanted to write a story that like she liked. Because she likes dogs so much.
Oh, that's nice.
So it started like that.
That's really cool. So you've seen a lot of pitches because you've also done a lot of pitch competitions. And I'm sure you've just researched other pitches and stuff for your own interest.
Mm-hmm.
What is the biggest gap that you see in other pitches that people are missing?
I think sometimes, like, and that's actually like a really interesting idea because I've been breathing like, certainly recently too, about like when I was putting the PDF, right? And I'm like, what is it that I see and stuff? And sometimes nobody really talk about ideas, like if the idea is good or is bad. And I think that's really important. And sometimes people like jump into the pitch thing without thinking, is that really worth it? Like, are other ideas like this? And sometimes, most of the time, I feel like if you thought about it, you could see there is something like it. And then you have to be smart and be like, okay, what makes mine different? But a lot of pitches I see, they just try to be exactly like Gravity Falls or exactly like this. But those things exist already. And if those things are so successful, it's because nothing was like that before. So I think the idea part is a big thing for me. And I see people pitching stories because they think the characters are really cool, but this is a buzzword, you know?
Yeah. So do you think starting with a really solid idea of why you're pitching this idea in the first place and what it means to you should be the first thing that comes through in the development stage?
I don't know if it should be the first thing, but it should be a question that you ask to yourself. Yes. Because I felt like you're going to be asked and it needs to be something that like you care. And of course you can be like, for instance, like the dogs thing, I think it's funny because it's like, I'm not crazy about dogs. However, I have a good story with dogs because this is why I care about dogs.
Yeah.
And this is why I like them. So you don't have to be completely in love with what you do, but you do need a personal connection with it, if that makes sense.
Okay, that does make sense. And like you described in your process, so like you throw around ideas and characters until something works and then you further develop that idea. I like it. Okay, so you're in the room.
Mm-hmm.
What now? You're just like, hi, here's my pitch. Goodbye.
No, really. You know what? Actually, before pitching, there is like 2-3 minutes of personal casual chit-chat talk that's more important than the pitch itself.
Oh, yeah? So like, how's the weather?
I think being a human first and being a storyteller second is a great asset. I think being able to approach any person that's giving you time to listen to the story in a human level, like, how is your day? You've been busy. How was your Christmas going? Or how is your family? Like, anything like that that puts you in a human level. Because if not, you're a business asset, you know?
Right.
And there's so many business assets. You want to be a person telling a personal story, right? And if you just a business asset telling a story, it's not meaningful for anybody.
I mean, that makes sense. When you watch like America's Got Talent or all these other shows, the people that get further have like such a emotional story attached to their talent that you just can't not pay attention to them.
Right.
Oh my gosh, this little girl was an orphan and now she's singing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like stuff like that. But it does matter. And even like casual, like, I don't know, saying thank you or hello, thank you for having us. Like little things or thank you for your time. Like all of that is really important because if you just sit and vomit your story, then everybody gets like, whoa, I know you're coming for this, but like they put a wall, you know?
Right. So even though you're like sweating and nervous and like got butterflies in your stomach, just remember to like chill a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how does the actual...
They're my friends. I'm like, are we friends? We're friends. We're totally.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know that, we'll be friends by the end of this meeting.
Okay. I like that. Like, these people are my friends. We're going to be friends by the end of this meeting. That's yeah. a good idea.
Right?
So how do you actually pitch the actual thing? Like, do studios usually have like a TV setup or a projector or something? Or you said you print the materials.
Yeah. So this is what it is. Everybody usually brings like a really nice USB with all their images. I hate technology. Because for me, it's like, what's the format? And I get really nervous, and I have a Mac, but what if it's a PC? What if it doesn't work? And da da da. And no, I want to be there and present my story. I don't want to be worried about technical nonsense. It's a little room. So I bring prints. I bring something that they can hold, that they can see, that I can grab one or another if that's what they think. It can disorganize if the pitch doesn't really go in the way I plan it because they got more interested in this and not that. I feel if you have a clicker, first of all, there's like a disconnection between the person and the screen. And second, like, you cannot go back and forth and you're like, I lost control. I got like 20 slices. I don't know what you want. You know, and it's really stressful. But if you're like nicely sitting with a person and like showing printed material, people respond really well. People like books. People like images that they can touch. It's great. I mean, why project it?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that a lot. Especially because, like, you can put something in their hands that they can immediately, like, look at on their own time versus, like, can you go back a slide? And they're probably not going to say that or whatever.
And they're not going to say that. They will never say that.
Yeah. So how does the actual pitch go? You just walk them through the Bible that you put together? Do you, like...
No, I never put text in front of people. I always have boards with images. And then I'm like, oh, so this is the characters. And I pass the next board. It's like, this is some sort of the adventure. Sometimes I have art and sometimes I have like just like mood boards, like image research.
Okay.
And sometimes there are sketches. Like, it doesn't really matter. Something that makes it look good. It's good to bring like nice little boards, but not too many, because then it's like you have 20. It's like you're not going to have time to show 20 things, right? So be really selective. And it's just like... you just show enough so people get interested. The idea is not, you're not going to sell a pitch on spot. Like, they need to invite you again. They need to be interested. And that's, you just need to make them like curious and interested and enough to give you feedback, you know?
So how do you, like, sometimes when I'm trying to like sell an idea that I have to somebody else, it may not be a pitch. It could be like a classmate or somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to force their interest sometimes. And I can tell I'm doing that. And it doesn't always... it comes across that way, like, you know what I mean? And for me, if somebody is like pushing their idea, I immediately back off and I'm like, even if it's a good idea, I'm not having this conversation.
Right, exactly.
I just like kind of like go into like, mode. So how do you create that interest in like a natural way in the room with somebody that you really haven't met before with like something that you're so anxious about, I guess?
Well, that's where I do a little like chit chat before, and I don't really push the pitch really fast. So I try to get like a sense of the person. And when I'm pitching, when you're like saying certain words, you can see if people react, if people take notes. And then sometimes like breaking up in questions, being like, oh, like, you know, like, you remember when you were a kid? Like, how was it to be a kid for you? And then try to use their answer to relate to your story somehow. I think if you take a pitch as just like me presenting and then saying goodbye, you get the chance to know who are these people that you're pitching to. But if you have it a little more interactive, then people feel included and they feel like they're participating. Sure, then they like it or not at the end. But they need to like you too, you know?
Yeah, I'm like taking all the mental notes for myself because I like want to pitch more myself. So I'm like,
well, you're recording, so you're going to be...
So you already said like, you want to leave it up to them, but how do you end the conversation versus like, and that's the pitch and like any questions are done. And it's like, okay, we'll call you. You'll call us. Like, how do you leave the room in a good way?
Usually like that. Yeah. Like usually there are like, I ask like, oh, there's any questions that do you have any immediate thoughts? And they're like, yes or no. And they're like, oh, send me these, thing on the email, because they always want like email track. We bring them usually like a little like leave behind, which is kind of like a booklet or like a little cover, something that they can keep and they can show around if that's what they want. We kind of agree on follow back through email. And then I'm like, so any plans for the weekend? what are you going to do? Again, that like kind of like human touch, like, because you don't want to be like, okay, goodbye. I did, you did the service for me. You listened to my story and now I must leave the room. Yeah, you know, it's just like being nice about it. Or like, oh, or like we're always like joking, like, oh, sorry, I hope it was not very dense. And I'm like, no. And they give you feedback actually, like about how did you present. It's like, oh, you were a little bit like talking a little bit fast in the beginning, but then you got more calmed down. And that's great feedback. That's like staff was like, okay, I need to calm down before I vomit all this information.
Right. Right. I gotcha. And then I guess, do you do any sort of follow-up afterwards?
Yes, I do. I'm not like, I don't send emails like when I'm sitting in my car, like after it. I usually like, if they told me to send stuff, of course, like I take like no more than 24 hours because they mean it, right? Yeah. And then I give like 2-3 weeks when I follow back. I'm like, hey, any feedback? And then they're like, yeah, that was another cup of tea. Or yeah, you know what? Like, we're not going to take it, but this is what we thought. And this is great. Like when they give you feedback, it's like, we're not going to take it, but this is what we like about it or what we didn't like. Or sometimes like, oh, you know, we're not into dogs, but we're thinking about blank. And you're like,
haha. My library.
And 3 months later, it's like, remember you mentioned, I just happen to have an idea about this now. So
sliding in there. No, I love it. You've got a whole strategy. And also, you said before, you're also trying to like sell who you are as a studio, not just here's a business asset that you can have that we created. You're like developing a relationship and stuff, and that's really good. And I really like the 3 weeks follow up asking for feedback, because that's like a really non-confrontational reminder for them to reach out to like talk to you again. And also like people love giving feedback, like everybody has an opinion, and like they're gonna, if they care, they're gonna give it to you, right? So cool. Is there anything else that you wanted to cover on pitching? Because I do want to talk a little bit about the conferences before we move on. But is there anything else that you wanted to talk about the whole pitching process?
I think one last thing that I think that was like a lesson I learned, and it's kind of quick, so I'm not gonna waste a lot of time. But also, when you go on the pitch, don't go with the hopes they're going to give you a job. Because a lot of people go with the hopes. It's like, they're going to discover me and I'm going to be a showrunner. And they can sense that. And just leave that at home. Like, nobody needs it. Like, if that's going to happen, it will happen. But not because you want it, because they want it.
That's a good point, yeah. It's like, leave your ego at the door, kind of.
Yes.
Nice. That's really great advice. And I do want to talk about all the conferences you've been to, because you've been to like every animation conference there is, maybe.
I mean, that's of them, but lots of them, yes.
Yeah, that's how we met originally back at Taffy in Toronto last fall. So can you just give me a rundown of like the conferences? I guess maybe you can organize them for like conferences for like beginners who are just getting into animation versus like conferences that are great for pitching, or like conferences that are great to like get a job out of or something. Like, I don't know, however you categorize them when you go to them.
It really is what you say. It really depends what you want to get out of it, right? Like if you're just, let's say you're just starting in animation, you're fairly new, you're like first year of college or like out of high school, you have no idea about animation, for example. I think and you may like storytelling or not, or you may like drawing or not, but you just love animation, right? I think going to something like CTN or Lightbox that are here in Burbank, I think are great opportunities, because not only they have like a lot of really cool panels, but they also have everybody in. And it's really easy to meet not only people that you admire, but people in the same position that you are. And I feel like the best thing for me of animation is just the journey with your friends. Like you make these friends and you learn together, and they're going to be your best network and your best contacts, but also your best support system, right? So for a person that like enters this giant world that doesn't know anything, I think this is like a great, it's a great way. And most of my best friends I actually met at CDN, and I'm really proud of it. So I'm glad I went, and it did so well to me. Like any of other competitions, like even if you're like, oh, I'm interested in freelancing, just have a booth on any of those and like sell your art and see what people have to say. And even if you don't sell anything, because the point is not really selling, it's just getting feedback, I think, so you can be better, right?
Yeah.
So those are great opportunities. Sure, they're a little bit expensive, but then since we're going to talk about other competitions, there are competitions that are way more expensive. So for me, this is like, pew. So yeah, those are good for that. If you are a writer, and you're interested in animation, perhaps going to this competition is good, so you can team up with like really wonderful artists. Artists also always need writers, so it's great for you too. And there's the pitching competitions are interesting because I didn't know that they existed until I started looking them into Google. And then I was like, wow, so they're not only one, there are just many. And there are different times of the year and different parts of the world. That means I can travel. Yay!
Yeah. So which ones have you been to? So you've been to CTN, Lightbox, Taffy. You mentioned the other one.
I'm really about waiting. We've been in the other Canadian one that's in Ottawa, OIFA.
Ottawa.
And that one, I've been in comic conferences in Europe. Like I've been in the Barcelona Comic Festival. And then I've been in Angoulême, which is for comic books in France. Then I've been in Korea for the SPP, which is the Seoul Promotional Plan, which the name have nothing to do with it, but it is for pitches and it is for animation. Then I've been in, which one? Oh, we've been in one in Florida, in Miami. It's called Mia or something like that. And then we submitted to every other one that have a really little pay fee.
Okay, I gotcha. So you've pretty much been around the block when it comes to animation conferences, but I guess you said CTN is and Lightbox are kind of your recommended go-tos if you're getting into all this and want to know more and meet people.
I think so, yeah. Because I feel like even like Taffy is for people that they already know what they want to do, you know? It's like very specific for either pitches or like kind of getting something out of it, but if you wouldn't know there if you don't know anything about it. I think it will be like a little bit like you'll be confused because the information is really specific.
I gotcha. Cool. So maybe just in wrapping it all up, what's I know you said you're on year 4 out of 5, but what's next for you right now?
Well, so we're trying this book thing, see how that happens. We just started with like a new collaborator, so let's see how that goes. I'm really excited about what we can make together. Then what else? We started a Patreon. I know it's going to be slow and painful, but I'm ready for this.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the Patreon a little bit? Because I think it's interesting what you're offering there.
We'll doing experiments, but we want to have a Patreon that somehow is a place for everybody that's interested in pitching. I feel like we got a lot of like knowledge on the go, and then, you know, I know it's really hard to find good information about like pitching, so we're willing to share our experience, and we're willing to put out like what did work for us, what didn't work for us, and hopefully people like learn, because I feel like in a lot of pitching advice, it's usually very generic and you're like, okay, you're giving me all these buzzwords, but how is that applicable and how can I do it? But we are going to provide the example of our stories and how we did it and how we failed or how we succeed and how we changed it based on the notes. We won't give names of like the studios that we went, but the story is the same. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Will you also be giving feedback for people if they want to get their pitch looked at or something like that too?
We'll look into later on when we start like opening more tiers feedback gives a lot of like time.
Yeah.
It's very time consuming, like art feedback, any kind of feedback. But I mean, I would love to. Like, I don't see why that would not happen naturally eventually.
Sure. If you could talk to somebody who's getting into pitching right now, what would be your best advice for them? Or even just smaller, littler Katya when she was getting into it.
Right. I will say, try to finish a Bible. Like, just go ahead and try it. And it's, don't put like all your eggs in the basket. Like, have that as a, yes, I want to do this, but also what's next, just in case, because it's always it's great to have a, you know, plan B. But if you're serious about pitching, just make it and let people know and let your friends know and get feedback and listen what they have to say and like adapt it and change it. And when you feel it's ready, bring it to competitions, bring it to places. There are like many wonderful places, like Taffy. We had a wonderful experience there. We met you and we met like every other people in the same boat. And you're like, oh, there is more people doing this. This is great.
Yeah. It's funny that you said just get started, because so I started going to Sheridan College in 2018 in the fall. But before that, I was actually developing a pitch Bible, but I was like so caught up in like the nitty gritty details that I didn't even like, I don't even have anything more than just sketches. It's just been in my mind this whole time because I've been like almost too scared to like put it together. I don't know why. I feel like that's a common thing for people though. They get so worked up in their heads. Well, I'm getting so worked up on my head. And I'm like, I've made it a goal for myself this summer to just put it on paper no matter what.
That's very important. That's super important.
I don't know why I don't know why it's such a big deal in my mind, but you're right when you say just get started and just put it on.
Yeah.
So I like that advice a lot. I'm going to take that advice. Then you can follow up with me in the fall and be like, did you do it? And I'll have to be accountable for that. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap it all up?
No, I think, I say a lot. I can talk for hours, so you don't want that. I think
Thank you for the blur. It was excellent. I was like, I don't know if you heard me typing, but I was like taking notes throughout the talk, and I'll probably listen to it again. But thanks so much for coming on the chat. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thanks for the opportunity. Like I had a lot of fun too, and I love talking about this thing. So thank you, really.
Excellent. And if you're listening and you'd like to get in touch with Katya and follow her work or Glow in the Dark Studio, you can do so by following their website, which is glowinthedarkconceptstudio.com, or their Instagram, which is the same name, or you can check out their Patreon, which you mentioned before, and I'll include all those links in the description of this podcast, including the pitch book basics that she put together as well. So make sure you download that because it's free. And that's all for now. So thanks so much for listening. Okay, bye.